Welcome back to the Godly Young Men Podcast. This is episode 79. We're excited to have you with us this week for an episode that I think is going to, it's going to make for some good discussion. I'm really excited about it. I think this is a topic that is becoming more and more relevant for young men, especially when you consider, obviously, all young men, we would expect, the Bible expects you to work, to be in the workforce to some extent. And so this topic that we're talking about today is relevant to that. Even if you might look at the title or when we're about to describe it, go, man, that's going to sound super boring. We're talking about kind of capitalism versus socialism. And so kind of like economic practices, which, you know, some people might, oh my goodness, that's so nerdy. Who cares? This is a big deal. Like the idea of capitalism as an economic structure as opposed to socialism, which is gaining, you know, has been, I guess, for the last 10 years or so, been gaining a bit of traction, especially among young people. We felt like, hey, we're almost 80 episodes in. We need to do an episode on this idea of capitalism as an economic structure as opposed to socialism. And kind of which one should Godly Young Men prefer? Which one should we be fans of, so to speak? Which one should we subscribe to, capitalism versus socialism? What does the Bible have to say about it? And so that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, our culture is, and specifically if you've been in public school, you're aware of this, has been down on capitalism for a while. And I think it's been pushing more of the socialism, kind of communism, the we're all together in this, and you know, therefore they demonize the 1%. I'm sure if you paid attention to politics at all.
Which the 1% are those who are like the wealthiest in the world.
The wealthiest, the top 1% in the world, the billionaires, right? The Elon Musks of the world are 1%. And we need to tax them, and capitalism is bad, and they just need to give to the poor and things like that. And so you hear a lot of this out there, specifically, unfortunately, from younger people. You're hearing it from young men and women alike, that capitalism is broken, capitalism is wrong, maybe we need to go to socialism, because there's a heart element to it of like, now we're just trying to look out for the little man. We're trying to look out for the downtrodden. We have to be careful of that, and that's what we're going to get into in this episode.
Yeah, so we're going to jump right in, because we do have a good bit of ground to cover with this episode, and again, stay with us. I think there's a lot of good application for this. And if you're listening, it's like, I have no idea really how to describe either one of those things. This will be a very educational one for you. But I'm going to go ahead and just describe kind of what we're going to describe what capitalism is. Because you might kind of listen to that word and go, I think I know what that is, but not really. Let me just read these definitions. I would, you know, would like to think I'm smart enough to know what capitalism is. I'm not smart enough to just know the definitions off the top of my head. So I'm going to read it real fast. Capitalism is an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit. We're going to get into this will probably be the easier thing here in a second as we get to what are the pillars of capitalism, like kind of the main components of it. But one big thing you can remember is private ownership. You know, private citizens owning things and in the trade industry. The next thing I'll read, the essential feature of capitalism is the motive to make a profit. The essential feature of capitalism is the motive to make a profit. But this is interesting. As Adam Smith, the 18th century philosopher and father of modern economics, said, "It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. Both parties to a voluntary exchange transaction have their own interest in the outcome, but neither can obtain what he or she wants without addressing what the other wants. It's this rational self-interest that can lead to economic prosperity." So in other words, based on capitalism, you are motivated by your self-interest, but you're also motivated to help serve somebody else's self-interest because they're not going to basically pay you for what you're offering unless it helps them. So in a way, what you're trying to offer is going to help them just as much as it's going to help you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you think about the baker, right? He's not just going to give you a loaf of bread. Like, he has to think about, he's got to keep the lights on. He's got to afford the ovens. He's got to put food on his family's table. He has needs that when you buy his bread along with a thousand other people,
you help meet his needs.
You're helping meet his needs, and you're helping him continually run the business, and he's helping meet your needs because he's providing this good for you. So you are giving him money, which is good for him, and he's giving you bread in return, which is good for you. And so there is a mutual element to this that really is kind of the private sector. Him as this private owner, right, this bakery owner, is, yeah, ultimately, he's a good guy. Sure, he's providing a service to the neighborhood, but he doesn't do that for free.
Like to give another example, Joe is a therapist. Joe could very easily say, you know what, I'm just going to be Mr. Benevolence and give away all my therapy advice. All pro bono, all for free. Joe then is not meeting any of his family's needs. Right. He's not putting any food on his table. And as a matter of fact, because he's not doing that, all of his time is going to be spent doing something else. And guess who's not getting any good therapy advice?
Right.
Anybody. And so for Joe, he's providing something for the self-interest of others, which is they really need therapy. And in exchange, they're obviously paying Joe, which is then meeting his needs. So very mutual, symbiotic relationship, if you will. Right. That really lies at the heart of capitalism.
Absolutely. So we wanted to get into, excuse me, six pillars of capitalism that, and I'll take the first three if you want to take the last three, that capitalism is founded upon these principles, these pillars here. The first is private property. Will spoke to this, but private property, which allows people to own tangible assets such as land, houses, and intangible assets such as stocks and bonds. So the tangible side, again, you actually own a home, you actually own land, you own whatever it is, you own a couch. The intangible assets are the stocks and bonds. You don't necessarily have that money in the bank, but you do own that, right? So private property is a big part of capitalism, and this is a very good thing because if you don't own it and if the government owns everything, which is very much what they're looking to do, where you'll own nothing and be happy is actually World Economic Forum and things like that. They don't really want you to own it. They want you to rent. They want you to borrow from them, and you'll always be in their debt. And so this is a big part of capitalism. Number two is self-interest, through which people act in pursuit of their own good with without regard for socio-political pressure. Very much what we discussed with the baker, very much right. What we discussed with my therapy practice is there's a self-interest level. And third is competition. Through firms' freedom to enter and exit markets maximizes social welfare, that is, the joint welfare of both producers and consumers. So there ought to be competition. This is why when we talk about there's antitrust laws and things like that that keep monopolies from happening in the world, because, and honestly, Amazon kind of comes close to things like this, like, well, we're a little squishy in this country on the antitrust laws and who can do what. But when one person owns all the production, then what? Then what? Like, they can do whatever they want with it. You see the Federal Reserve. Bitcoin comes along. They're not a big fan of Bitcoin because Bitcoin is an alternative money source. Whereas if they kind of have the monopoly on it, they can determine how much money they print, how much they don't print, what they take out, what it's worth, all of that stuff. And so a big pillar of capitalism is that idea of competition because that's what keeps prices down. If I'm providing a sandwich for $5 and you were the only one in business previously providing it for $20, and mine is the same exact thing, people are going to come to me for $5. You're going to have to drop your prices.
The $20 sandwich is going down in price. Right?
Correct. You're going to have to drop your prices because if I'm making a profit at $5 and can do it, and there's rules and regulations in place to make sure somebody doesn't come in and go, I can offer that for $1, and they take a loss just to drive you out of business. That does happen. There are rules and regulations surrounding
Michael Scott it. Paper Company. That's what I think of. Yeah, from
that's
the office.
Exactly it. So it does happen. But competition is the third pillar of capitalism.
So we'll keep rolling here. Number four is going. If you'll scroll down for me, so I can see the last one there. But is a market mechanism that determines prices in a decentralized manner through interactions between buyers and sellers. In other words, there's not some, you know, main forum out there that says, all right, this is the price of everything. It's the prices are determined in a decentralized manner. In other words, the seller determines the prices based on, are the buyers buying this, to Joe's sandwich point. Like, right. Everybody kind of gets to decide their own prices for things. And this I got this on here. Prices in return allocate resources which naturally seek the highest reward, not only for goods and services, but for wages as well. So if I'm selling something, it is in my best interest to make the highest profit off of it. But if I'm setting the price too high, guess what? Nobody's going to buy it.
Right.
And so, again, setting these things in a decentralized manner is this market mechanism thing that's kind of the fourth pillar here. Number five, I'll keep going. If you have anything, feel free to jump in. Freedom to choose with respect to consumption, production, and investment. So, in other words, again, to further exactly what we've been talking about, you can choose not to buy the $20 sandwich. You can choose not to pay for Joe's therapy. You can choose, like, you get to choose, what am I going to pay for to consume? Dissatisfied customers can buy different products. Investors can pursue more lucrative ventures, and workers can leave their jobs for better pay. That is a big staple of capitalism, is this competition, this decentralized pricing, and the freedom to choose with consumption. Like, I can choose to buy this house, or I can choose not to. We could give a billion examples here. Hopefully you get that idea of freedom to choose based on consumption. And then number six, maybe most importantly, limited role of government. Limited role of government to protect the rights of the private citizens that own the private property and maintain an orderly environment that facilitates proper functioning of markets. So in other words, everything that we've described, the last aspect would be the government's not jumping in to interfere with everything, right. That's setting prices and doing all these things that are going to interfere with the free marketplace that kind of, in a way, regulates itself based on everybody's self-interest. That is a very brief, seven, however many minute kind of foundation of what capitalism is. These are, again, those six pillars. A lot of, you might call nerdy stuff, but this is what our country's been doing for the last however many years, and this is what our marketplace is based off of. So you do need to have a kind of fundamental understanding of it.
It also is, the key term is private, right? Private versus public or private versus government.
Right.
That's really important when it comes to us as godly young men. As you get ready to start a family, as you're thinking about marketplace, you're thinking about making money, you're thinking about these things, it's important to realize, we're going to get into socialism, but you know what? When you own your own company, you will realize just how many taxes are being taken out. They have taxes taken out of a lot of people's paychecks, so you don't never actually realize that. And when you own your own and you have to actually physically write the check to the government, trust me, you know, those who own
it'll
their own
sting
businesses
a little bit.
Correct. Those who own their own businesses are by and large conservative in a lot of senses, because they look at it and they go, how in the world am I going to afford this much tax on all of my products and on everything else? When you actually have to write the check, it matters because of things like this, because you realize in a socialist setting, you're not just paying for your kids, you're not just providing, you're providing for everybody. And so they can take from you, and you're not really incentivized to give more, because they're just going to continue to take and take and take, and you're going to be giving it at a loss, because there is no privatized element to this. And so that's, as we kick off into socialism, that's why this kind of matters, is we're expected to make very good financial decisions. That's why Will did a great job on the last outline about budgeting. Finances matter a great deal as Right. a young man, as you're getting prepared to enter into the workforce, or as you are in the workforce getting prepared to start your family, or even if you have. We want to have the proper outlook on this, and we want to be people who are high output people, as we've talked about, strive for greatness. And what that means also is we want to be high output in the money that we, you know, and in the goods that we're giving people and things like that. I think a godly young man should be entrepreneurial if at all possible. Not everybody's going to be, that's okay. But there is a large element of capitalism within that that teaches you a lot about how the world works, as opposed to socialism, which we'll all let you get into socialism here.
Yeah, and as I read these definitions, just pay attention as I read these to how this differs from what we just described with capitalism, because you'll notice key differences. So socialism, a political and economic theory of social organization, which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange, that whole market thing that we just discussed, should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. No private ownership, not individual, the community as a whole. Socialists complain that capitalism necessarily leads to unfair and exploitative concentrations of wealth and power in the hands of the relative few who emerge victorious from the free market competition, people who then use their wealth and power to reinforce their dominance in society. Because such people are rich, they may choose where and how to live, and their choices in turn limit the options of the poor. So that's what socialists usually use to attack capitalism, which I didn't have near as a robust of a definition of socialism. It's basically the government, you know, is owning everything. You're not owning private property. Everything is sharing. It's all about equality and bringing those up here to down here, and bringing those from down here to up here, and getting everybody on the same playing field. As Joe spoke to earlier, it's a very nice sounding thing. You know, get everybody equal.
Try
That's
to take
great.
Care of the poor, yeah.
Right, take care of those who really need it, and maybe humble the really rich people here. You know, again, that sounds good to a lot of people. But again, what socialists usually use to attack capitalism is the idea that capitalism is designed for basically certain, the 1% to get really, really rich and everybody else to not. We can maybe get to that a little later on. But what would you add to the definition of socialism here?
Yeah, I was just looking through this and kind of, they use words like community. They have a lot of good sounding things, which is why I think it gets a lot of young kids to believe or to buy into it, is like, yeah, we do want to take care of the poor. It's a community. You know, the community regulates these things as a whole. Define community.
It's a utopia feel almost.
Right, right. It's a commune, a utopia. Yeah, like this is just the ideal that everybody's working together. And some people think that the Bible and Jesus is very much pushing for socialism. That, hey, the church is supposed to be socialistic. Not really. Not the way that it is. If anything, the church is, it's a theocracy. You could also say it's kind of almost like a monarchy with Christ as the king, right? We're not going to get into that whole thing, but a lot of people think that it's socialism. The difference is there are biblical pieces to this, biblical pieces to capitalism, which we're, you know, we'll get into. But as far as it goes with socialism, it discourages a lot of people from doing anything, because they're just going to, again, they're going to take from you. And their thing, this, the second point, of they complain that capitalism necessarily leads to unfair and exploitative concentrations of wealth and power in the hands of the relative few. That is true. There is a level of crony capitalism, and that's where capitalism actually falls apart. Capitalism is very good. That's where capitalism can be taken to the, again, crony capitalism, which is you have allowed monopolies to exist. You've allowed pharmaceutical companies to go in and to set certain key metrics within within the government, right? They get to go and be lobbyists, which I don't know how that's legal, but they get to go and be lobbyists. And that's what creates superpowers, these mega billionaire companies, where they're just bringing in ridiculous amounts of money and making more money than some countries make. That is the crony capitalism.
But that violates that sixth pillar as well.
Correct.
The role of government.
Correct. Right. That violates a lot of the private. They are taking the community, which is the government, and they are basically using the government as the strong arm against the people. And so they are creating monopolies. They are creating a lack of free market. So people will say, well, that's capitalistic and that's wrong. Not necessarily. Again, we'll get into that a little more.
So, Joe, you got, hopefully you got some scriptures pulled up. The Bible, what I wanted to do is, like, if you Google the Bible capitalism, you'll get a bunch of verses. If you Google the Bible socialism, you'll get a bunch of verses. So what I wanted to do is kind of look at some of these, evaluate them under the light of, you know, the Bible does not say thou shalt be capitalist and thou shalt not be socialist. Of course not. But, like, there are principles that we can derive from there that we can, you know, look at from the text and see, okay, what can we pick up here? What are some things that, you know, we can, again, pull from Scripture from a principle perspective that would establish, okay, maybe this is the economic system we should be leaning towards. So, Joe, if you want to start with maybe the capitalism verses that we have here.
So, 2 Thessalonians 3:10 is a big one. Free when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. If he's not willing to work, he's not willing to eat, or he's not good to eat. I'd say that's pretty much get busy. Make sure that you're producing in some way. Make sure that you're working. Socialism is one where a lot of people don't have to work because they will just take from the upper to give to the lower. And so it does incentivize a lot of laziness. It does incentivize a lot of people to not have to do very much. Cat's out of the bag in terms of where I fall on socialism,
obviously,
capitalism.
You probably picked that up by now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, if you have not figured that out. But yeah, I think it de-incentivizes a lot of people from working, so we have that passage. Second one is 1 Corinthians 9:13-14. Do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple, and those who attend regularly to the altar have their share from the altar? So also the Lord directed those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel.
So you have the idea of working for wages. Like, yeah. The harder you work, the more the ability that you're going to have to be able to make money from that. And then the last one I think is very interesting is Matthew chapter 20, where we have, I didn't put the verse on there, Joe, sorry, but the parable of the vineyard owner, where this gets to, because some might argue in this passage where to get to that it's socialist because everybody gets something that's equal. But what's interesting is you see this kind of free market idea in the sense that both parties mutually agree on a fair price.
When he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into the vineyard.
So you have the vineyard owner who says, I will pay you this much to do this work. The workers could have chosen, you know what, I'm not going to do that. That's that freedom to choose component of capitalism we were talking about. But, and again, there was nobody coming in saying, all right, vineyard owner, you have to charge this much for labor. It's decentralized. Right. These two parties mutually agreed and said, yep, that's a fair price. I'm going to do that. Pretty capitalistic right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into the other side of it, because people will look at the Bible, and as you said, they'll say there's a lot of socialism in the Bible. So we go back to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 23, starting in verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor gather the gleaning of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am the Lord your God. This is what's taking place in Ruth, where they do actually leave a little bit for Ruth to glean as she's going throughout
the
fields.
Like on purpose, yeah.
Yeah, Boaz has his laborers to, on purpose, leave some for the widows. That's actually part of the law of what they were supposed to do. So people look at this and say, that's socialist. You have the guy who owns the vineyard, who's big money time, or big money maker, right? He's big time. He's supposed to leave some for the others. Now, you could say that's capitalistic.
Joe, why is that not socialist? Pretty obvious to me, but
yeah, because
he still owns the field.
He still owns the field. You're not taking from the field. He is, out of the goodness of his heart, supposed to help the poor. Now, if you tax him into oblivion, he's probably a lot less likely to help the poor When we realized taxes were at a decent rate back in the day, and I know I shouldn't get political, but when they were at a decent rate back in the day, this is how you had the rich people of society helping build the hospitals, helping support orphanages, things like that. It was the wealthy that really built a lot of the roads and did things like that, because there is an altruistic mindset, especially in early Americans, that we were supposed to help other people. When you de-incentivize that through socialism, things like that, when you take his land and go, hey, it's for everybody. No. That's his land. We are appealing to his good heart to leave some for those that are less fortunate.
Those are the different components. Is, again, you do have the guy that owns, he still owns the field. He still is the one choosing to do so, leave the stuff for the poor. But you also don't have somebody coming in, checking over his shoulder, saying, hey, did you leave enough for the poor? Let me take from your bountiful harvest there and give some to the poor. That's not what's going on there. And that's exactly what socialism would be under those pretenses. And so that's not the case. Joe, what about Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4? I think these two are probably the most well-known of people bringing up socialism in the New Testament, for instance.
Right. So Acts 2, 44. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common, and began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all, as anyone might have need. If you skip down to chapter 4, verse 32, it says, and the congregation of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own, but all things were common property to them. And with great power the apostles were giving testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and abundant grace was upon them all. For there was not a needy person among them. For all who were owners of land or houses would sell them and bring the proceeds of the sales and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would be distributed to each as any had need.
Sounds pretty socialist to me. So I'll go first on kind of why I don't think that that's advocating for socialism as an economic structure, and that would be my first point. Is we're not talking about an economic structure here. We're talking about a group of people that kind of mutually decided this is how we're going to operate. That's not a referendum on how a nation should be run, on how, again, an economic structure should be run. That is not, obviously Luke there writing, saying that, okay, this is how America should be run, is how these... No, not at all.
Right.
In a way, I do believe that's how a church should operate, in the sense of, like, if there's a brother in your congregation, a family, who is really struggling, guys, lost his job and they're about to lose their house, I do think, you should band together as a congregation and say, we're going to do whatever we can to help this guy. If we had, hopefully it wouldn't come to this, but if another member has to sell one of his luxury cars to put food on his family's table, hopefully he does.
Right.
But another component, again, that would add to why this is not an argument for socialism is nobody's forcing them to
do
this.
There's no compelling them to.
There's no compulsion here. They are doing it of the free will, goodness of their heart. Nobody is again, looking over their shoulders saying, are you giving? And they're doing it of their own money, not of somebody else's. They're not going, you got Barnabas there, I think, in Acts chapter 4. He's not going to the rich guy in the congregation saying, all right, I'm going to take from your money and give to the poor. He's doing it of his own.
Yeah.
That's a big difference with socialism, too, is a lot of people who are socialists, who are advocates for socialism, always want to give other people's money, not theirs. They're wanting to give the people who are richer than them, but never their own. That's kind of a component of this as well.
It's the, they're so nice, they'll give you the shirt off of somebody else's back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if they're giving a shirt off their own back, man, hey, that's great. That's fantastic. And if you want to create that utopia within it, that's great. But yes, that's not a societal thing, but it's also not a compulsion thing of like, you have to do this. We are compelling you to do it. It's just what everybody was doing. And so it's a very loving, it's driven by love and not driven by greed. And so much of socialism, I think, is driven by greed of like, I want what that person has. They make too much money, they need to give it to me. No, they worked really hard for that money. And even if they cheated the system, that doesn't make it your money in a roundabout way. So
let's get to that brings up something I was going to say. Let's go ahead and get into Joe, obviously, as he said, we are staunch believers in capitalism. We believe capitalism is better, more supported by the Bible than socialism is as an economic structure. And so what are some practical problems with socialism? Let's start with kind of the thing we haven't really discussed, elephant in the room. Okay, the goal is equality. We want everyone to be equal. Well, who gets to determine what's equal?
Right.
Who gets to do the taking and the dispersing? Right. Who gets to say, I'm going to take from this guy and give to this guy? Somebody's got to. There has to be somebody in power, somebody making those decisions. So by definition, before you've even gotten off the ground, there's no equality. There is somebody in power, the government typically, who is making those decisions. And so there's no equality is a farce.
And if you read classic Soviet things like that, where socialism, communism, there's a difference a little bit. But, when you look at things like this, where this has taken place before Venezuela, it's very much the animal farm equality, like some animals are more equal than others. The people in charge in Venezuela, the people in charge in Russia, weren't exactly slumming it with everybody else. They were very much living high on the hog, so to speak.
So I have on here, equality is a nice ideal, but completely unrealistic. For that reason, yep. Number one. But I've also got on here Matthew 26, verse 11. Jesus basically says you're always going to have the poor with you.
Yep.
This nice ideal of like, yeah, it'd be great if nobody could be poor. It's not ever going to happen. That's just not realistic whatsoever. And with the last episode, we talked about kind of what's ideal. From a nation state perspective, from a country perspective, that is an insane ideal, you know, idealistic perspective to say, yeah, we're not going to have any poor people. Because the other thing is, what's your definition of poor? Making $40,000 a year, somebody's got to make these decisions. And that's where socialism falls apart.
What's great about America, what's great about capitalism is it allows for the poor to work really hard, potentially. And we're getting more away from this because of the crony capitalism taking place. But it's the American dream, right? You can be poor. You can come from a different country and be an immigrant where you don't have two pennies to rub together. And you can end up making your millions, and a lot of people have, because, hey, the equality of what is it? Equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome.
Yeah.
Everybody's got an opportunity in some form to try to do well in America. That's not always the case in other places. Another problem with practical problems.
Go ahead and skip to the last one, Joe, just because I think it ties well into this one.
Yes. Power corrupting those in charge. I mean, again, I could really go off on from a political perspective.
That's just how it goes. But
that really is how it is. Is power will seep to a few, and specifically in a socialist setting, it will seep to a few, and then they will control everything. And you saw this. There's a great book called The White Pill, and it's all about Soviet Russia and about Lenin and then Stalin after him. And it shows how Stalin held on so firmly to everything there and all this communism, idealistic communism, and how detrimental that was to Russia. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. Power will corrupt those in charge, and all power will eventually flow to them.
It speaks to the idealism point of, yeah, it would be great if those in power were just, you know, super loving and kind to everybody and only wanted what was best for everybody else. We have, all of human history to tell us that that's just not the way it works. When somebody gets in power, almost always power is going to corrupt people. That's why, to some extent, obviously, you know, anyway, not to get political, to some extent, that's why our country is built on the idea of the president is not the king. He doesn't get to just make every single decision. There are checks and balances in place. There are three branches of the government. You have, you know, things that are supposed to be put in place so that power can only corrupt to a certain extent as opposed to one guy in charge of everything. So that would be the second thing. Number three, and we'll hit these quickly, Joe, because we got to go to the last few points here. We've already kind of spoken to this. Number three would be, as far as a problem with socialism, it disincentivizes working hard. If you know somebody, the government is going to reach in the pockets of somebody else to make sure that you can put food on your table, cool. Why do I need to work all that hard? Why do I need to even try to, you know, advance myself? If I know I'm going to get taken care of, if I know I'm going to get somebody else's money or whatever. The example somebody gives of like, you know, you're in a class and the teacher basically says, all right, we're going to give everybody A's in this class. Doesn't matter what score you get. Cool. I don't have to study. I don't have to put in any time and effort here. If everybody's going to get an A, that would be equality, right? And so that would disincentivize working hard. And then lastly, Joe, if you want to get us in the next one after this of why capitalism is better, so I guess the first point of that, I would say it's the opposite. It incentivizes laziness and mediocrity. When you disincentivize working hard, what you're doing is incentivizing people to, again, to use further the analogy, not study for the test, not really try to put in the work to make sure you get a good score on the test because you've been told, oh, cool, I'll get a good score on the test no matter what I do. And so it incentivizes laziness and mediocrity. As we switch gears into why is capitalism better, it's basically the opposite of that.
Right. We start with incentivizing working hard because the idea is if I work really, really hard and if things do go well and, you know, there's luck and everything else involved, but if I work really hard, then a lot of times you will do better. You obviously will do better than the guy who doesn't work hard unless, again, he's really lucky or has some cheat in the system or whatever. But it does incentivize you working hard because the idea is, man, if I learn to bake more bread and there's a demand out there, I'll meet the demand and I'll do really, really well. That's one of the reasons I went into therapy is, yes, I did want to help people. I also looked around that, you know what, there's not a lot of sex addiction therapists specifically in the Church of Christ, and come to find out there's not. And so I get phone calls from all over the place looking for help because I looked and said, where is the demand going to be highest? Where is there a need This is capitalism 101. You're looking for that need, and it incentivizes you working hard. To the flip side, it de-incentivizes or disincentivizes laziness and mediocrity. If you are lazy, well, look, nobody's really going to help you. And if you don't have a good to sell, or if you don't have anything that you're bringing to the table, even as an employee, if I can't come to the table and work really, really hard, why should I get hired? Why should they be forced to hire me just because,
right,
hey, well, I showed up for the job? Yeah, but you're not good at it, right? And so if you are lazy, if you're mediocre at your job, you're not going to get the raise. But in a capitalistic society, you ought to be moving your way up and making more money as you work really hard and as you're diligent and as you're striving for greatness, right? Not mediocrity. It does, for the most part, incentivize that.
That's
for
great.
You to try hard.
That's great stuff. The third, I'll keep us moving here. The third, yep. Third reason why capitalism is better is it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with, like, there's mutual self-interest involved. The whole idea is based on the idea of a mutually beneficial relationship regarding the exchanging of goods. Like, you are somewhat incentivized to make sure the other guy over there is taken care of because of your own self-interest. Like, there's such a uniqueness to that, yep, system of everything we talked about at the start. I'm not going to continue on it, but that's what you want to see is, I want to help my neighbor out because it's also going to help me out when it comes to the exchanging of goods. That's what it's based on. And then fourthly, it creates a value-based society. And by that, I mean things that add more value according to the marketplace will be rewarded accordingly. I'll never forget an economics book I read in high school. I forget what grade I was in. But it basically made the point, like, you want to make a lot of money, find something that everybody sees as valuable, to Joe's point about therapy and what he decided to do with his life. You know, it's simple supply and demand. If there's a lot of demand out there, you're going to be viewed as valuable. That's why I always don't have any problem with, like, professional athletes and things making a lot of money that a lot of people do. Is like, the marketplace is clearly shown, right, there is a lot of value in that. TV deals and, like, that's,
well, if we pay teachers the same as we pay LeBron, they'd be, you know, maybe
this country would be better off. Like,
right, like, but teachers can't dunk a basketball and, you know, they're not 6'9", 250 and run like a gazelle.
There's a much higher supply of teachers, right, than there, right, exactly.
It's just supply and demand. It's pretty, pretty simple. But unfortunately, a lot of people get this wrong. A lot of people look at it and it's like, well, because I think it should be worth money, it should be. Or a lot of the kids that are,
I
like,
want to play video games and get paid for it. Like, right, sorry, there's not a lot of value there.
Exactly. I want to design video games, or I want to go into computer graphics, or I want to go into making YouTube videos. Sure, you may strike it rich. You may end up getting a lot of money. Good for you if you do. Most of the time, it's a saturated market. And what you end up getting is you get these people that go to college. They get the degrees that are saturated, that everybody in their class got the same degree, and then they come out working at Starbucks and wonder why they can't get a job. Because you did the same thing as everybody else. It's capitalism.
Why are trade schools becoming so popular? It's because there is a pretty high demand for welders. There's,
right,
a pretty high demand.
Few people want
to
do it.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, and talk about something that's adding value to society. People really need plumbers and welders and all these, yep, things. And so, again, just a basic economics lesson of, like, if you want to make a lot of money, find something that find something that has low supply, obviously, as Joe spoke to, but then also something that's high demand that adds value to people's, yep, lives. You'll do just fine. So, kind of the last question we have. Hopefully, we've illustrated and laid out pretty clearly why we believe strongly that capitalism is better. What I want to end with is two questions. One, Joe, I do want you to kind of address this question of, does capitalism overlook the poor? I think that's an important question because I think that is a legitimate kind of, I guess, attack on capitalism. But the other thing I want to end with is, why does this matter for a godly young man? So I don't know if you want to tackle both of those or just one, but
I'll let you tackle why it matters.
Okay.
Because I want to say on capitalism overlooking the poor, there is an element where it can, and there's a reason why this has come to the crosshairs of so many people. Capitalism right now is because you're looking around going, the American dream is kind of dying. I have worked hard and I've gotten nowhere. That is because we've actually gotten away from capitalistic ideals. We've gotten more toward the, I don't know if you want to call it, I don't know if it's imperialism. I could be using the wrong term, but I know crony capitalism is a big one. Like, we've gotten more into...
Those pillars are crumbling, basically.
Correct.
Yeah.
More into, like, these big businesses going in, and they kill the mom-and-pop shops. You got a Walmart in town, and there goes three mom-and-pop shops where I was told if I work really, really hard, I'm going to do fine. Yeah, until Walmart comes and goes, and plants right in town, and all of a sudden, all your 30 years of hard work are gone because you can't compete with Walmart prices. Like, there's no possible way. So when that's coming in, people are losing faith in this American dream of, if I work hard, things are going to go really well. That's not always the case for everybody. So we wanted to speak to that and to say, capitalism is not...
it's not perfect.
It's not perfect. Across the board, it's not perfect. But capitalism, when done well, is intended to take care of everybody, and that goes to the poor. When capitalism is done well, it will have a, and this is Reaganomics, it's a trickle-down effect. Like, those that make the most are going to invest more in their businesses, and when they do, they'll hire employees, and when employees are hired, it's going to give jobs to a lot of people that maybe wouldn't otherwise have jobs, and when there's a demand for this, they're going to be able to raise the prices on the jobs, you're going to make more money, and so you're actually lifting up the poor from the very bottom, like, because it's a trickle-down approach. So when we demonize the 1%, we don't realize that those 1% that make a ton of money, Jeff Bezos, as much as I may dislike the guy, and Amazon employs like tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people that would not otherwise have jobs. And right. So we have to think of it from that perspective of like capitalism ultimately, when done well, even though Amazon really doesn't do it well in other ways, it does uplift the poor and it is intended to care for the poor. Socialism may care for the poor momentarily, but what happens when you run out of the rich guy's money? Now who's making money? Now where do we go? You didn't help the poor, you just hated on the rich. So there's a big difference between those two, and I don't think capitalism has to hate the poor.
There's a video I was watching, and basically it was like, Republicans and Democrats agree on more than they think. Republicans think the poor should be given nothing. Democrats think the poor should be giving handouts, so they both agree the poor should stay poor. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of a goofy way to look at it, but I think one of the biggest reasons why we can look at socialism and why this is, I'll relate this into why this matters, is because anytime you are giving somebody something that they didn't earn, it goes all the way back to 2 Thessalonians 3:10, if you don't work, you shall not eat.
Yeah.
That's an unbiblical system. Like that's to incentivize laziness and to incentivize, again, that idea of like, if you give the poor handouts, they're going to stay poor. That's pretty true, because then any desire to move up and any desire to make something of yourself to achieve is gone. You've completely removed that incentive. And so the reason why this matters for godly young men is twofold. One, as I spoke to at the start, you will be in the workforce. You're going to be in this economic system if you live in the United States. And so therefore you need to kind of be aware of the tenets of each. But then secondly, because honestly, capitalism is right in line with our whole mantra for this podcast, which is striving for greatness, striving to achieve, make something of yourself. Socialism kind of is far more in line with accept mediocrity. You know, somebody else will have your back, so you don't really have to work all that hard. You think about all the components we've looked at of incentivizing laziness versus disincentivizing working hard for socialism. Those are not godly young men traits. Those are not, so that's from an individual perspective. And if we're telling you from an individual perspective to work hard, don't be lazy, make something of yourself, why then would we turn around and say, okay, but from a national economic perspective, let's do the opposite? Right. We don't think so. Typically, people who are going to subscribe to socialism, let's face it, they might be good-hearted, they might want to care for the poor, but there's inevitably going to be an element of, we don't want to have to work as hard as, because that's the thing, especially with young people, is they see what a lot of older people are making money-wise, like people's in their 40s and 50s, and go, I want to go ahead and skip to that. Yep. So let me just argue for socialism. That's a very lazy way to go about it. Like, work hard, work really hard, set yourself apart, add value, everything we talked about. You'll make that kind of money. But all these young people wanting to skip ahead to the end where they're already making what, again, 50s and 60-year-olds are making, that's just a lazy way to go about it.
And even if you don't end up making the big bucks, even if you're seeing capitalism crumble to a certain degree based off of everything we've talked about, you're working unto the Lord. That's why you work hard. That's why you give me your very best, is you're working unto the Lord. And you may look at it and go, well, my boss makes 15 times what I make, and that's just not fair. Look, to Jesus' point, did you take the denarius, right? Did you say that you were going to do it? We've talked about it before. Then show up and do it. You're working unto the Lord. That's the point of capitalism. I'm going to work hard because God has dictated that I work hard. That working hard is actually a blessing, and that was part of the garden. Is Adam going out and tending the garden, and working was a part of perfection before the fall. This was while everything was great. He still had work to do. We have work to do. Let's make sure that we're putting our hard work, or we're putting our hard hats on and our vests on or whatever, and just getting to work and making sure that we're giving it our very best because of God, and He's demanding that we do it. That's capitalistic.
Hard hats and hard vests for Mr. White Collar over here. That's so funny. We will wrap right there. We've gone long on this episode, Joe. This is one of our longer ones more recently. Hit us up with your questions about this. Hit us up with your comments, any thoughts you might have. We encourage that with everything. We got some great comments lately. Want to shout out those of you who have commented. We always appreciate the feedback. We'll try to respond to as many of those as we can. But we're going to wrap right there. This has been episode 79. Right? Is that right? 79?
Yep, 79.
79 of the Godly Young Men podcast. We'll be back next week for episode 80. Thank you so much for watching and listening.